Hi, I'm Naomi. I'm 36, newly married, and all I keep hearing is, did you leave the kids at home? Or, who's going to visit you when you're old? Or, they will give your life purpose, you know? Yeah, I do know, thanks. But what I don't know is if I actually want a baby. So here's a podcast on the Secret Recordings Network where I speak to new mums, non-mums, baby wanters, baby rejectors to figure out whether to baby or not to baby. In this episode, I speak to Tori, who is a geneticist with four children.
One of the things I found is I will never feel like I have been doing as much as I could with my job or as much as I could with my kids. You will never feel you are giving enough to either thing.
And I'm joined on this journey by my sister and best friend, Camilla.
Hello. That was a really loud hello.
It was. Someone's feeling chirpy today.
Well, to be fair, I was listening to the last few and I've realised that every time I go, why hello there? And I'm like, you really need to stop doing that. It's really annoying.
So lately, people keep asking me a question that for me is the most ridiculous question in the world and possibly proof as well that they haven't been listening closely enough to the podcast. So a bunch of people who I know keep saying to me, oh, you know, you're coming towards the end of the podcast series. Are you going to announce on the last one that you're pregnant? And I'm like, no, you donkey. Can you imagine if I could actually schedule a pregnancy to be able to reveal on the final episode that at that exact point, I'm at 12 weeks and I can say to everyone, hey, I'm having a baby.
You could have been duping us the whole time, though. You could have been, like, pregnant before we even started it, and actually you've been hiding it under baggy tops.
I feel like you would really know.
No, I would definitely know if you were pregnant.
But I'm like,
no,
dude,
why are you asking that question?
Listen to the podcast. The whole point of this thing is even if I say, yes, I want to have a baby, it's not that simple, and it definitely ain't simple enough that you can perfectly schedule it. Because if it was, then there wouldn't even be any need for this podcast, really, would there?
Well, this is how you're going to sift out your friends. You know who's really listening, who's enjoying it. Get rid of all the stragglers that are not listening properly. There are a few people that have made comments to me. I'm like, they're definitely not listening.
Like what?
No, but I don't want to say because then that person might know if they do listen.
So just to clear that up, I will not be announcing on the final episode that I am pregnant.
I know this.
Good. Now, Tori.
Fascinating.
So, Tori, who we are about to speak to, is a bit of a legend. Now, one of the reasons that she's a legend for us is because we are from Leicester, and Tori's work as a geneticist helped put Leicester on the map because she was the person who confirmed that under that car park in Leicester, it was, in fact, King Richard III, because she did all the DNA stuff on it.
When you told me you were interviewing this lady, I think that this is the bit that I took from it most and was like, oh, like, where are you finding these people?
Got contacts, babes, contacts. But she's doing this TV show as well for the BBC, where she's looking at people's ancestry. So, you know, like, who do you think you are? But for regular people, so you can find out your ancestry and where you came from.
I think it's fascinating. And mine and Ed's would be very, very different, wouldn't they?
Oh, yes, it really would. So our great-grandma was a gypsy.
Yep.
And Ed's great-grandma was not.
No, definitely not. And I think there was definitely some royalty in Ed's.
Is there actually, though, or are they just really posh?
No, I think there's actual royalty, because he told me this morning that in Scotland there is an actual statue of his, like, seventh great-granddad or something. And apparently I'm going to see it when I go to Scotland, because we're going this year to visit his aunt.
That is amazing.
I know. And honestly, he showed me where his dad went to school. Whoa.
Didn't you do well for yourself?
Well, this Leicester girl, you know. I always say that I'm his bit of rough. But saying that, you know, he had a very good education, and I can spell things way better than him. I tell him all the time. He says he writes Q like a pool cue. So I'll be like, I'm just in the queue. And I'll send him one back saying, are you about to play some pool? And he's like, oh, shut up. Honestly, I get him all the time for it. Sorry, Ed.
Okay, so joining me now is Tori King. And am I right in thinking that you were told that you wouldn't be able to have children?
I was. So when I was about 15, I discovered that I had, well, what we now know is a bicornuate uterus. So uteruses are triangle shaped with like pointing down. So the bit at the very bottom is the cervix. And what happened was, essentially, I was putting tampons in because I was starting to have my period. And I was still getting bleeding. So I talked to my mom, who had been a nurse, and she was like, that's really odd. So she took me to the doctor, and what they thought I had at the time was two cervixes, and because I had a partial kind of septum that came just down into the vagina. So they thought, okay, two cervixes, two uteruses. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I know. And at 15, where you're kind of going, and they were saying, this is incredibly rare. You're unlikely to be able to conceive. You're unlikely to have children. Even if you do conceive, the children may be malformed because they won't be able to develop properly. One side was bigger than the other, so on and so forth. And then later on, I developed endometriosis. So this is obviously when bits of the uterine lining, the lining of the uterus, is outside the uterus and still kind of bleeds during periods and things like that. So very, very painful. They did kind of surgery where they went and had a look and they said, yep, you've got endometriosis. I then, obviously, thinking I was not going to be able to have children, was a little less careful with the birth control.
You know, before you kind of talk about that, when the doctors told you that,
yeah,
at that point in your life, because I suppose at 15, you are kind of then thinking about your future. Were you sad that the doctors had told you this?
Yeah. I mean, so I think, so at 15, oddly enough, I had always thought I would become an obstetrician delivering babies because my mom was a nurse and she'd kind of worked in that area. And I just assumed that I would have children. I was the eldest of three. I hadn't really thought about it. So the idea of not being able to have kids was a big deal. And I remember, you know, first to sort of two or three boyfriends saying to them, look, you know, I may never be able to have children. In fact, I was recently contacted from an old friend of mine at Cambridge who says, I remember you saying, you know, very, very early, you know, relatively early on that you would not be able to have kids. And he said, I always thought you were trying to put me off. But but I kind of knew that it would not just affect me, but it would affect whoever I was with, whoever, yeah, I ended up with. I was really upset about it. And as you was getting older and I was getting into my 20s and I was, you start to think about, okay, I hadn't kind of thought I would even start thinking about having kids until I was probably in my 30s. But the idea of not being able to do it kind of made it, a bigger deal in a way.
And yeah. How did the conversation go down when you would say to people, oh, and by the way, P.S. I probably can't have children.
Yeah. The chap who was my first husband, of course, it was one of these things where we thought, okay, maybe we'll adopt. We don't know what we're going to do next. And it was one of these things that we kind of thought, well, we'll just have to see how it goes. And I'd just very recently had surgery, which had kind of really confirmed that there was issues with endometriosis and this double uterus thing. And so just slightly less careful with the birth control and then fell pregnant. And then it was the whole thing about, oh my goodness. So then they watched me like a hawk through, yeah, this whole process. And it was, you know, slightly nerve wracking because I'm kind of obviously worried, you know, is the baby growing okay? I also had really bad morning sickness. I would lose over a stone with each pregnancy in the first trimester. Oh my goodness, it was awful.
Oh, so you say each pregnancy and I'm like, why would you do that again?
I know. You forget that bit, right? When you're cuddling this little thing. And Tom was born preemie. So he was 3 weeks early and he was slightly smaller, but not particularly desperately worried about it. Second child, so Mikey, was actually born at 29 weeks gestation. So, ooh, yeah, he was nearly 3 months early. So he was in the NICU, so the intensive care unit.
Yep.
Poor little chap had loads of little tubes going through him. And I used to go into the hospital every day and kind of do kangaroo care, you know, sort of have him next to me and this kind of thing. So, but you would never know now. He's this like 6'1" strapping guy. You would never know in a billion years. He's 20 now that he went through all of this. But then, so I've actually got four kids, but I did have one who was born 20 weeks gestation. And so my waters broke and I went into labor at 20 weeks. But he didn't arrive for a couple of days. So there was some thinking possibly might re-heal, but no, went into labor. And that was pretty awful because you go into labor and you give birth and your milk comes in and oh my goodness, it completely knocks you sideways. So when the waters broke and for a day after, he was still alive. It's awful.
Yeah.
And then he obviously had died at some point, and then you go into spontaneous labor at this point. But once I'd gotten over, and I have to say, the hospital were amazing. They were so good because obviously they let you hold him. You can have, you know, they take a little picture, they do little footprints. So it was something that, it's not something to go back and have a look at particularly, but it's there, if you know, to
it's
me.
It's there if you want to.
Yeah, and every year I do go to his grave. Every year I will still go to his grave and just put flowers down, even though, so gosh, this is getting on for 20 years now. And it's one of those things that it was for the best. He would have been born too preemie. His quality of life, if he even survived, would have been awful. And have been very open with the rest of the children about it. And actually, it's kind of in some ways become even bigger to them than it has been to me. So this whole idea of this kind of missing brother has become this almost, I don't know, this big figure in their lives, which has been an interesting one. But yeah, I definitely wanted to get pregnant again. Had thought of probably three kids. And then there was such a gap between the two boys and my daughter that we thought, okay, we'll have another one.
I know. This stuff would put you off, like the terrible morning sickness.
Yeah, it was awful.
You know, the fear that it might happen again. Like, did you have it?
Yeah. Oh, goodness. So, yeah. So the thing is, though, is I was completely watched by the medics. They were so good. I mean, I went in sort of, you know, every few weeks and they were checking everything. And also because Mikey had been born preemie and then Peter had been born preemie and died. With the girls, at a certain point in the pregnancy, they would give me steroid injections just to help develop the girls' lungs that little bit more just in case they arrived early. All my kids have arrived sort of 3 weeks early. So have had to stay in hospital for sort of a few days just to kind of, you know, keep an eye on them and things like that. But it's, I've been really, really well cared for by the doctors that I've had.
Babe, how many kids do you want? If you could have your dream number of kids, how many kids do you want?
I always thought I wanted three, but I think this has come from three.
Yeah.
But then
you've told me you want three.
But that
ain't gonna happen.
As I get older, I feel like the thought of three feels like a lot. Maybe two. Two would be nice. I'd like to have a kid that had a sibling because I feel like it's important to have that relationship when you're growing up. But if you only had one, I feel like that would be okay too.
So sitting very much on the fence.
Yeah, that's my favourite seat.
Twins.
If we had twins by chance, then what can you do? That's fine. I feel like it'd just be hard work.
Okay, twins it is. So from you're probably not going to be a mum to being a mum of four children now. So how old are the kids now?
So they are 21, 20, 15,
not really kids.
And 13.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know, you just kind of go on autopilot, I think, with the kids. What else can you do? You just keep going. I think one of the things I found is I will never feel like I have been doing as much as I could with my job or as much as I could with my kids as I could do. You always feel slightly torn. You will never feel you are giving enough to either thing. That's something that I've just kind of come to terms with and have tried very much all throughout my kids' lives to be. So things like if I go to work early and my ex would take the kids into nursery so that I could go into work early and then I would pick them up after lunch and then I would have the kids, and then it's kind of working your schedule as much as possible to kind of spend as much time with them as you possibly can whilst keeping career going. So yeah, that's been tricky.
So it's like a constant juggling act.
It is a constant juggling act. I mean, they're that bit older now, and if anything, sometimes it's like, oh mom, no,
leave us alone.
Yeah. You know, it's that time when the kids are like, they won't hold your hand anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, no. Mom, can you walk like, you know, 20 meters behind? But it's really sweet because they come back to you. So I found that kind of through the teenage phase, they're finding their own feet, right? Yeah. And then they come back to you again. So, and you become friends. I don't know, it's nice with my boys. It's I feel it's friends kind of thing. Yeah.
That's mad though that it took you, well, depending on which way you look at it, 21 or 13 years to figure out that to not kind of guilt trip yourself about being able to go to work and do your job.
Yeah, I mean, and I certainly slowed down. I mean, my PhD was kind of done in part-time. I took chunks of maternity leave. And then always in the back of your head, you're kind of thinking, oh my goodness, I need to get this done. I need to get this. Or, you know, things like waiting until the kids go to sleep and then working on stuff. So it is a complete juggling act and it's exhausting and you're on autopilot. But it does get better.
I'm about to say, so why do this thing then?
And having kids is hard. I mean, it's hard work. I mean, it really seriously is. When there are women who you know, they stay at home and they look after the kids, don't think for a minute that that is an easy thing to be. You can go to work and have a cup of coffee when you want. So, you know, I think women's choices, it's, you know, it's very, very personal what you want to do with this. And I think that there's a lot put on women these days. If you're not working, if you are working, it's almost like you can't do anything right sometimes. So I think you have to find your own way of doing it and your own way of what you feel comfortable with.
Right. We've talked a bit about your job briefly, but tell me a bit about what you do, because in itself, it's fascinating, but juggling that with four kids makes it even more fascinating. Yeah.
So I'm a geneticist. I basically work on, it's like genetic genealogy, forensics, this kind of thing. So I'm best known for having led the genetics in the King Richard III case, so identifying his remains, genetics forming part of that evidence that it was actually him. But I've done things like, sort of, my PhD was looking at the link between surnames, which come down through the male line, and the Y chromosome, which is a piece of our DNA which also just goes down through the male line. So, for example, do all people with the surname Attenborough, they all share this surname, do they all share the same Y chromosome type as well?
Ooh.
Yeah. So David Attenborough took part in this. So what I did with this particular surname and other surnames was I went around the country and I had lots of Attenboroughs take part, made sure they didn't know they were related to one another. And if you look at their Y chromosomes, 90% of them are identical or near identical. So they are obviously Attenboroughs around the country who don't know they're related, but actually they share a common male ancestor probably about 400 years ago.
What?
Yeah, so it's really
crazy.
Neat. So it's like, it's sort of joining family trees together and this kind of thing. So that's the sort of stuff that I work on. So I did archaeology at Cambridge, and then I came up here. I wanted to sort of switch into genetics. So I did the genetics master's up here. And towards the end of my master's degree, I was having this surgery and they were looking exploratory and they're going, yeah, you're unlikely to ever be able to have children. So I went back down to Cambridge, started this PhD, and felt pregnant and came
surprise.
Up. Surprise!
Great timing!
Great timing! My PhD supervisor was, you're not going to want to come back and work after you've had a baby. And I was going, no, actually, I think I do want to try and combine career and kids. And the head of department was like, well, I can't understand any woman who'd want to come back after having a baby. So, you know, completely paternalistic sort of, oh my goodness.
Also, it's not that long ago.
No, it's
like,
not.
Do you know what I mean? It's not like the 1950s
long.
Or
no,
something.
No, but it's Cambridge.
Yeah, okay.
Academia, I suppose. So, yeah. So in the end, I just kind of thought, no, this isn't going to work. So I actually stopped my PhD and I worked part-time for a bit in a lab just to kind of keep my hand in, had second child. And I had been offered a PhD up here in Leicester when I'd done my master's degree. And so I approached them again, you know, would this be possible? They said, yeah. So we actually got a Wellcome Trust Prize studentship to actually do this PhD. So I started my PhD with two kids and had three during it. So Peter, who died, and then the two girls. And so I did it sort of part-time. But there are pictures of me with like baby over one shoulder and me typing. I used to take baby into the lab. And so in one of the offices, you know, would put her down in like a little baby seat or, you know, toys around and this kind of stuff, just so I could keep going with getting the work done. And obviously I had fabulous lab mates who would be like, you know, picking baby. I'm going, this is fantastic, right? A bit of spare time cuddling a baby, this yeah. kind of thing. So it just kind of worked that way, really. And then finally, after PhD, even my first postdoc, it's called when you finish your PhD, I even did that part-time. And I didn't actually start full-time again until, gosh, how old was... So Jenny must have been about six yeah. when I kind of really started back full-time again, and slightly less of the juggling, but still, you know, picking them up from school, this kind of thing, making sure that I'm there to do the school pickup and have the rest of the evening with them and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a complete juggling act.
I just got home from having laser hair removal on the old bikini line. Whoa. It was my last appointment, and just FYI, they crank up the voltage of it every time you go. So from this, I've concluded two things should I ever be in a situation where I'm giving birth to a child. One is that I'm totally okay with somebody getting all up in the area. At one point, you have to hold your own bum cheeks apart, so cool. Two, I'm not okay with pain. I have a ridiculously low pain threshold, and at points today I thought I was going to cry. So getting up in the area, cool with that. Pain, not so down with that. Now, can we go back in time first? So the endometriosis stuff, did you find that out just as a consequence of the other stuff?
Well, I was just getting loads of pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those things. And it's interesting because it's been in the last few years. I've seen a lot of news reports about how it takes up to 10 years for women to be diagnosed. They'll have this pain that's going on. And to get finally diagnosed with endometriosis can actually take quite a long time. I think because of the other stuff I had going on, it actually got diagnosed earlier than yeah. it might have been if I didn't have that. It was just very, very painful. But and I do remember a doctor, I think I must have been about 21, saying, well, you need to go off and have babies. That'll help stop it. And I was going to think, I'm 21. I'm not ready for... I had my whole life, you know, I still have things I want to do first, because nobody can prepare you for having a baby. I mean, people say having a baby, it's like, it's really, really, you know, it takes over your life. It takes over your life. So yeah. I knew I wasn't ready for that yet. But I have to say, actually having the children has completely helped the endometriosis. I have hardly any problems with it now.
But that's so mad, because a few years before that, you've got another doctor saying to you, you probably shouldn't be doing the pregnancy thing yep. because you don't know how that's going to pan out.
Yeah, and you probably won't even be able to conceive anyways. So, oh, clearly wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they really got that
wrong. They really
got
that wrong. And this was actually in Vancouver, because I was still in Vancouver at the time. I hadn't come over to this country. So every once in a while, I think at some point I should send him a photo or wander in with all of the kids and go, yeah, you totally got that wrong. But doctors do get stuff wrong. They yeah. do. They're human, right? Yeah. They will get stuff wrong.
True. Now, obviously, with the work that you do in genetics, then, and we kind of talked about this earlier, but do you, with working with other people, see people who are maybe going, okay, well, I know I've got this gene that's maybe going to result in this condition or this thing, and that kind of throws a spanner in the works of whether to have
yeah,
a kid or
so
not?
Yeah, so it's actually something that we talk about with our first year genetic students. So we give them lots of kind of ethical issues to kind of talk about. So, you know, designer babies, this kind of thing. And one of the things we talk to them about is, would you... And there's no right or wrong answer to these things. It's people kind of deciding what they think they would do in a particular situation. So say, for example, you know that you have Huntington's or some kind of disease that's in the family, that if you have that particular gene, you're not going to manifest it until you're that bit older. You've probably had children by that point, which means that, A, you might not be able to help bring them up. You might you are likely to die early or be sort of incapacitated. And also, you've got the possibility of passing it on to your own children. What do you do in that circumstances? Do you just decide that you won't have kids at all? There are a number of genes, genetic diseases that you can screen for beforehand now, from sort of embryo implantation, this kind of thing. And we basically ask the students to think about how they would deal with that and debate it, which is, I mean, I really like it, because usually with the students, they're quite shy and they don't really kind of say anything to begin with. And then give them about 5 minutes and you get these really heated discussions, which is what you kind of want them really thinking about, this kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, there are people who have to come to decisions about that. And actually, it's in my own, well, kind of my godmom. So my godmom's family has this in there. So her son has had a child who has got a genetic condition, has now found that it's actually sort of come through the dad, so her son. Now it's a case of finding out whether or not she's the carrier or whether or not it's her ex-husband who is the carrier, because it has implications for other members of the family. And do her other children, do my godmom's other kids go on and have kids themselves? Do they get themselves tested first? If they know they have it, do they just not try? Do they? I mean, it's huge, huge life-changing decisions that they have to think about.
Also, that when you say stuff like that, it makes me really go, I'm being ridiculous about making this decision, because actually,
you know, in your family, there's nothing really going on.
Yeah. Touch wood. But then again, it potentially, if I have like a funky chromosome that's maybe not come out in anything else, and Dan has, and then we combine, that can, you can then create.
Yeah. So things like we know that each one of us will carry particular mutations that, if coming together with another person with the same ones, is going to cause issues, but you don't know that. So things like cystic fibrosis is one of those ones that's, it's relatively common, it's not hugely common, because people can be carriers and then they come together for that. Yeah, that's the chance everyone takes when they're having kids.
I feel like I can't think about this stuff.
No, it gets really deep and really heavy.
Yeah.
But it's a decision. But people do it all the time. So it's an interesting one. And I have to say, I mean, I love having kids, and I've brought them into kind of, you know, I bring them into the lab. I've had them go and do, you know, science festivals with me. Actually, it was really sweet. So I did British Science Week. We did science in the shopping center in 2018, and my youngest was 11 at the time. And we were doing DNA extraction from a banana and showing kids, you know, what DNA actually looks like. And I was like, Jen, I've got to go. I've got to go to the loo. Like, come back. And she's showing everybody how to do DNA extraction.
Amazing.
It's like, my job is done. I'm going to go have a coffee now. And leave her to it. So, I mean, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. Oh God, it's a lot of difficulty stuff a lot of the time. We're going through the teenage years. But I mean, it's a lot of fun. Kids are, it's great. I really, of course I would say this. I have four.
Big thanks to Tori. What a legend.
Seriously, what a woman.
Four.
I can't even. Four, I mean...
Four. And a PhD in finding King Richard III in the car park in Leicester.
She's been busy.
She has been busy.
She is on it. Her diary is full. She is amazing. And also, she sounds so chilled throughout the entire thing when she's talking about it. It all sounds very like...
She's super laid back about it all, isn't she?
Very, very. And I think, actually, if you're going to have four kids, that's the way you need to be.
True. She did advise me, actually, afterwards, that you should have another one.
Did she? Why did she advise you this?
Because we were talking about people who only have one child, and actually how it's more difficult to keep one child entertained because they're relying on you for the entertainment.
Yes.
And she was like, yeah, your sister should have another one.
I think we need to do another podcast to second baby. Because I'm really unsure. And honestly, all of your interviews and things, maybe we should be doing percentages for me as well, because for the second, that is if I can have a second. We just never know. But yes, still haven't made a decision as to whether I want to give Chester a little sibling.
Watch this space.
Yeah. Maybe I'll announce on the last episode. Chester Mark 2. No, I'm not. That's not happening.
Again, can't schedule a flipping baby. Now, I know you're not quite as clever as Tori.
Sorry, something happened to my headphones.
The gormless look on your face.
I just had to move the it went off and then back on again. I was like, oh.
Proof right there that you're not quite as clever as Tori. You also had to finish your degree whilst pregnant and then with a tiny brand newborn baby.
Yeah. Whoa. I mean, I'm not an overthinker like you, because if I was an overthinker, I probably wouldn't have put myself in that position.
I wonder what you're going to say then. I was all steady on.
Why? What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to have a dig at me.
Oh, sorry, sis. But let's just say...
I thought you were going to go, and you wouldn't have been able to handle it.
But who's the cleverest in the family now?
Oh, for God's sake. Yeah.
What did you get at uni, Amy?
2-1.
What did I get?
Didn't give a crap, though. I did a media degree.
What
Come
did
on.
I get? What did I get?
1-1. First.
And by the way, Naomi is way cleverer than me, but, you know, I don't know how this happened, but it did. Yeah, God, really hard. What didn't help is that my course was finishing. So the university was closing the course, so I couldn't defer to do it even more part-time or put anything off. I had to do it when I was doing it. So I did a module a bit early so that I could do a module before Christmas so that I could then have a bit of a gap and concentrate on having Chester.
But even that, so Chester was born in January. Even that, you were so pregnant, and the early part of your pregnancy, you were so poorly.
Mm-hmm. It was really hard. And I remember at Christmas finishing all my work and leaning over the laptop, and literally my back was, and I couldn't get in any position that was
comfortable. Even to sit at a desk, you had a massive bump, so you'd be miles away from it.
It was awful. And I was wrapping presents as well. It was like double whammy on the back. Yeah, no, not fun. But then I did, the uni were really good, and I did have a good little break whilst having Chester because of doing the module early. So I was glad I got it out of the way.
But then how old was Chester when you went back to finish it?
About 4 months.
Yeah.
When I went back to do the final module. Really tough, especially when it came to doing the final pieces of work. I had about 7 pieces of work to do. I remember calling my supervisor and crying on the phone because I was like, I just don't know how I'm going to do it. And she was so nice. And she was like, look, just whenever he is sleeping, just try and do like 250 words, like whenever you can, which meant that all my work was really disjointed, but I managed to throw it all together in the end. And honestly, like the day that I submitted all those pieces of work, knowing that that was it, I didn't know how good they were, whether they were going to be rubbish or not, but I was just like, they're done and I think they'll at least pass. And it was the biggest relief.
And you got a first.
Yeah, I did. I mean, I did have to appeal. I kind of don't want to throw that in there, but I did have to appeal because I'm about half a mark from a first. And I kind of thought, given the circumstances...
She played the pregnancy card.
Don't call it the pregnancy card. You just told me how hard it would be.
No, I know, but you did.
Yeah, no, I did, because I was like, hang on a second, let's put a person who is not pregnant and doesn't have a newborn against a person who does, trying to complete this work. I think it's only fair. And actually, you know, my overall grade, if you averaged my third and fourth year, because I did it part-time, were way over a first. So I deserved it, and I'm claiming that.
Congratulations. Well done, you.
Thanks.
Cleverest in the family.
I'll tell them about what's on the mantelpiece at Mum and Dad's.
Oh, yeah. On the mantelpiece at Mum and Dad's are there two kind of big picture frames. With one is a proud picture of me, and one is a proud picture of Camilla. And the picture of me is me on my graduation day, by the way, with some really terrible hair extensions in.
Oh, you look lovely, though.
Oh, they were so witchy and ratty. Yeah. Anyway, me on graduation day, Camilla on holiday with a monkey on her shoulder. So they can now update the photo frames.
It's so funny. Yeah, but I kind of don't want them to get rid of the monkey one. I feel like this is more me. Okay, so Naomi, second cleverest in the family. How are you with percentages? Better than me.
Oh, I could go on Countdown Me.
No, that's my dream. Anyway, where are you? To baby or not to baby?
I'm to baby. I am sneaking up the to baby percentages. 90-10.
Wow. And for 4 children?
0-0. No, 0-100. Oh my God, I said I was good at percentages. Follow my journey and tell us about your own on social media at To Baby or Not. If you rate and review this podcast, not only will it hugely help us out, please do it, but it will guarantee that your children will quietly watch Peppa Pig whilst you're trying to work. Join me next time when I try to decide whether to baby or not to baby.
Next time on To Baby or Not to Baby.
I was pushed back on a bed and they were running down a corridor, and a woman kept shouting to me, stay with us, stay with us. And I was thinking, well, this does not sound good.